Okay, Dr. John Marie, you want to make a comment?
Well, I just followed what Dr. George has said. I agree with him. Well, from power perspective, there is no strict recommendation to say that any a ship carrying sick people should be denied entry. It should be really looked into on a case-by-case basis.
Exactly.
To me, yes, the purpose is really to protect the public. So there are guidelines, international health regulation guidelines, which advise all the countries to follow certain procedures. One of the procedures mentioned by Dr. George is this declaration, which is issued by the ship of the aircraft to the intention of the port health officers to tell them we have people are sick, and then they have to discuss and see the type of sickness and investigate. So after the investigation has been done, then the determination can be made as to whether the ship can be allowed in or not. Yes, there is no restriction. I mean, no strict recommendation. It depends on the investigation and all the findings.
Okay, I want to thank you very much for that. It's just gone 5 minutes afternoon. This is the Brass Tack Sunday special on the coronavirus, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials.
So building supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
If you're just joining us, of course, coming in from a lovely service at church, you are joining this Brass Tack Sunday special on the coronavirus with Minister of Health, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick. We have the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Kenneth George. We have the Specialist on Infection Control at the QEH, Ms. Yvonne Martindale. We were joined earlier by Ambassador to China, Francois Jackman. And we will also be hearing from the former director of aviation, Mitchison Beckles, just after the news. And we have on the line as well, Dr. Jean-Marie from the PAHO in Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean. And he's responsible for health surveillance, disease prevention, and control. Now, what I want to encourage the general public to call in, because I should not probably know this, but I know they have an important meeting on this tomorrow. And your questions and queries will also be able to inform some of the discussion going forward there. And that is what a true democracy is about, giving you the opportunity to lend your voice, your opinion, your questions and queries to the national discourse, the national discussion. So we welcome you to give us a call, 434-1790, 434-1790. And you can send a short WhatsApp to 266-4862. We say good afternoon and welcome to the next caller. You're on the air. Good afternoon and welcome. Brass Tack Sunday, good afternoon and welcome. Okay, we go again. Brass Tack Sunday, good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Corey, and your guest.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I did hear last week that England and Germany had closed their borders. Now, this morning, I did hear someone in the studio say quite authoritatively, so how can we say there is no sense in closing our borders? But I think that word, that should be reworded. And the other thing about it is, how can we know, or rather, I am sure there are quite a few numbers of people who would have gotten out of China before the red flag was raised. So we can't say that it's not out there floating around even among us down here. Yeah.
Mm, go ahead.
I'll let Dr. George answer that one. Mm.
Dr. George.
Yes.
Yes.
We were a bit ahead of the curve in the sense that the information coming to us was late December that there was an issue of concern with the spread of a novel virus. And from then, when we heard that, the hospital stocked up on a lot of personal protective protective equipment, gloves, full PPE, N95 mask, standard mask, so that we had a handle on it before. With respect to closing of borders, different countries do take different actions based on their perceived risk. What I will tell you is that England has not closed their borders to China. What many of the countries are doing is restricting travel from ground zero, which is Wuhan. But if you think about it in terms of world economies, etc., closing borders from China will not work in the most instances, and it's probably counterproductive. We have advised Barbadians that non-essential travel to Wuhan and Hubei province should not take place. This is not a travel ban, however, this is encouraging Barbadians, don't go to the epicenter. And then if Barbadians are indeed traveling to other parts of China, they need to take precautions. There is information. We have fact sheets that are available in the Ministry of Health, which give you up-to-date information on the changing patterns of disease. So we need to protect ourselves. So persons leaving and ending up in China for whatever reason, they should protect themselves. And then when persons come back from the area based on their risk stratification, if they are high or low risk, we will make a determination to what type of area we move forward in. If it's acute case, it's the hospital. If it is a case, an asymptomatic person who has come back from China, we will watch them. What we mean by watching them, the public health will call on these persons twice a day to make sure they're okay. We are going to issue those persons with thermometers to check their temperatures. And as Minister spoke about, this week we're going to have an active team that is going to go to those persons' places to make sure that they are okay. So that is surveillance. We're keeping them on a watchful eye. We communicate with them and they communicate with us.
Okay, they had a question coming in. At first, I was not going to read it, but I reminded that we're asking questions on behalf of the public and not ourselves. So this is one says, I understand the minister and Dr. George. However, yesterday I visited a store and a visitor appeared to have a very bad cough. She did not cover her mouth at all, and it was close by. How are visitors educated on hygiene when they visit other territories? Now, that should be basic. It should be taught that at home and in preschool. I understand that. But I ask that because Dr. George, you mentioned the fact sheets in the Ministry of Health. And I want to see what mechanisms we have to get that information out to the public using the same social media. It reminds me of the venom of a snake, you know, a poison snake. You use the same venom to heal. You got a lot of misinformation going there. How can we get this information out in real time?
Well, we have identified that the tourism industry, the whole industry indeed, are one of our key stakeholders. On Tuesday, I'm going to be briefing the DHDA because that is the route that the ministry will use to engage persons in that sector. But we need to make sure that no sector is left behind. We have identified, we were told not to leave out school children and the churches, etc. So based on resources, we feel that these groups should be engaged. So it has to be all a society approach. There will be people who will do the wrong thing. However, I think if we engage the key agencies, we could probably make a difference. And the engagement of the key agencies is for to protect not only the staff within the tourism industry, but also to give information out to visitors who may need some form of guidance.
Okay, roger that. We take some more calls as we head to 12:30, where we have to take the latest from the Starcom Network News. So we say good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to Brass Tacks Sunday.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
And the lady, please.
There's a lady here.
Sorry. My apologies, ma'am.
That's fine. Good afternoon.
No disrespect. All right, guys. What about in transit passengers? Are you able to track in transit passengers that come to China? Because sometimes if you pass through a country, you don't normally get your passport checked. You understand? Sometimes you don't get off the plane. The plane is just in transit and moving on. We'll be able to track with the technology we have everyone that passed through China in transit. That's my question.
We have the capacity to be able to track persons who are in transit, even from China, as long as those persons have not spent time in any one of the countries that they pass through. For example, if you're coming from China and you go to the United Kingdom and you're in transit, you take a plane directly to Barbados, yes, we have the capacity to be able to track such persons. But we are also aware that there's a gap there as well. And so we are trying to use some other mechanisms to be able to fill those gaps, or that gap, that one particular gap. But generally speaking, we have been able to track persons.
No, Mr. Bosley, I mean, let's say suppose somebody flew up from Australia to Japan and then passed through Trinidad with a minute.
Yeah, no, yes, I'm aware. But okay. I'm saying that as long as the journey was not broken by overnighting anywhere, we can still track them in that way.
Okay.
But if you overnight, if you spend 2 or 3 days somewhere else, then there's a break in that particular tracking mechanism. And that is a gap that we have identified that we are trying to close by using another method.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the question as well. This one says, good morning. I just tuned into the program, so I'm not sure whether this matter has been discussed. We have been told that Barbados is prepared. To this end, is there designated quarantine locations for persons who present symptoms? And I want to say yes, the minister did speak to that, where we have mechanisms and structures in place to do some home monitoring as well. We spoke about the security on the port, the protocols for the ships when they come in, etc. So just to let those of you who are now joining the program know what it is we have been discussing thus far. We go back to the line. Good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
You're on the air. Go ahead. Listen to your telephone. Hello, caller.
All right. Hey, am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Go right ahead.
Yes, at the back of the Lysol can has the human coronavirus as one of the agents that can kill, right? Mm-hmm. Are you hearing me?
Yes, we hear you loud and yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, but on the CNN and MSNBC and the BBC, they're saying that the particular virus is immune to many antiviral agents. Can you confirm or speak to that particular thing? Because if it's supposed to be a strain of virus that was a mutation from another form of coronavirus, and it seemed not to have the exact way of dealing with it, is it possible for the normal antiseptic agents that were distributed at the airport and seaport, and for people to use, would that be effective against this new strain of human coronavirus?
All right, let me take this question. What I will tell you is that we are still finding out more and more about this virus every day. However, we know about coronavirus, the general characteristics about coronavirus in general. And generally, the virus is easily killed when you clean and disinfect a surface, as long as you follow the instructions given for the disinfectant and the cleaner. So, let's say, for instance, someone sneezes and the particles land on a surface, the advice is still to clean that surface with a multipurpose detergent, and you can disinfect it afterwards with, again, following the instructions, using a disinfectant. Viruses are very easily killed with cleaners and disinfectants. We have not heard anything scientifically that has been proven otherwise as yet. But yes, there is a lot of unknown about this virus. But as far as I am aware right now, there is nothing out there saying that the regular detergents and disinfectants do not kill it.
I don't know if you actually covered this particular point previously before it came on, but does the immigration and customs people have any facility just in case they wanted to come in contact with someone that was a suspect with a flu symptoms? Do they have proper protective materials and gowns and stuff like that at the entry ports for someone to be able to deal with this passenger or passengers in a more aggressive nature where you have to actually touch a document, you know, and handle parts of the passenger's personal effects in order to escort them to a room for further medical diagnosis and stuff like that. Are there sufficient preventative gowns and stuff at the CN airports to deal with this situation?
I would say yes. And what we've done, even before we heard about this particular strain of virus being declared as a global health emergency, we have been stockpiling on our personal protective equipment. So the answer to your question is yes.
So can I comment?
Yes, go see Emma.
Right. So just would like to let the caller know that we have invested a lot of time and effort, and we continue to do training of and sensitization of all frontline staff at our ports of entry. This would include immigration, customs, red cap, meet and greet, maids, all persons who in some way may interact with a passenger. We have done training. To date, we, I think, have topped about 300 people have been sensitized, and this is ongoing. We're not going to stop. And there's a reason for doing this, because we believe if we give persons good information, they'll be able to act accordingly. Based on the information we have, the frontline staff are not at immediate risk. We have advised the airport, GAIA Inc., that all staff should have easy and quick access to simple hand washing tools. So 70% alcohol, sanitizers, and so forth are strategically placed. We've encouraged that at the actual station where these persons are at, they should be able to have hand sanitizers. If the persons are going to be interrogated or have to speak to public health, they have the appropriate equipment and the appropriate protective gear that they will use depending on the risk. So I just want to assure you that we have given consideration to this, and we will make sure that our number one priority is making sure that the staff remain safe. And we will go our utmost to make sure that staff are given good information, and the main issue is to protect that and their safety, and then the safety of the Barbadian public.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Now, I'm being told that the fact sheet is on the GIS website and was sent to all newsrooms, including Starcom. I did check, and it is there, so you can do a quick check for gisbarbados.gov.bb. You could type in fact sheet, and it's there. The novel coronavirus, and it has all the questions and answers there, and that's one of the ways you can help to protect yourself by getting the information. So we take another call, and we're going to also look at how individuals can protect themselves. Good afternoon, and welcome, Brad Stacks. You're on the air.
Corey, are you there?
I'm here.
Corey, a double-edged question. One question in two different parts. One, are the ambassador and the staff of the embassy detained and examined by our health people? And then number two, and before they're allowed to enter the country. If you can answer the question. Thank you.
I'll leave that for the expert panel. Dr. George, go ahead with that one.
I can't speak to the students in China. What I will tell you is that we have been working with the through the ambassador to give good information. We have encouraged the students to follow the information given by their universities and public information that's out there on how to protect themselves. So we believe that I have personally spoken to some of the students. I know that they are very brave, and however, it's a situation that has a bit of uncertainty to it. And we have advised them that use the good information outside there. The information that we will say is similar to what they will hear in Beijing, and to limit their contact with people. With respect to the screening of persons here in Barbados, you wouldn't randomly screen a person because of how they look. You wouldn't randomly screen a person because they were working in a particular area or came from a particular country. We need to randomly screen based on risk, and the risk is a travel risk, and the risk and the travel risk has a link to it. Days of travel, 14 days within a 14-day period. So we should try to stay away from pointing out any particular group as contagious without not having good information, and that's how good science prevails.
And Dr. George, I would like to add there also that we have the criteria laid out in terms of screening people and persons who would require further investigations.
Absolutely.
And as long as you meet that, then we, irrespective of who you are, that is going to happen.
Right, because in, I don't know if I'm on still, but in today's world where different people move differently, you may miss people from China if you're only looking for someone who looks a particular way. So we need to broaden it a bit and to make judgments based on the evidence we have in front of us.
I think one of the things I want to underscore is for us to use more science and less emotion. Remember,
absolutely.
I remember traveling when, you know, around 9/11, you see a Muslim-looking person that you would consider to be a Muslim, you get. I know I was traveling, I was seeing these Chinese-looking people, and I was saying people that we associate with Chinese-looking people, and saying, well, I feel for them, because I know people can be, you know, treating to them with a particular stigma. And that's why we got to use more science and less emotion.
Yes.
This last question, as we gallop towards the 12:30, it says, good afternoon to all. Please tell us if the yachts will still be allowed to berth without knowledge of health, custom, and immigration, as is now happening. As a frontline person boarding these vessels, I heard that we were made aware how to operate, but I'm still waiting for such knowledge. Now, being in the studio, we're never able to confirm whether the person is, you know, saying this from a particular point of view, but still let's answer based on if it was.
Mm-hmm. So what I would say is that we need help from the public. If a member of the public knows that information, you need to share it. It doesn't make sense that you have information and throw it out on the airway. I have indicated to the public that we are covering all our ports of entry with enhanced surveillance. So if that person has some extra knowledge about a ship or a yacht that's getting through the system, share it with the relevant officers within the Ministry of Health. Do not, you know, I think it is, we can't withhold information to score points. So I would advise the public that we are trying our best, to scale up the surveillance at all our ports, all the ports. If there's any person who, as I said, just as the police said, if you hear something and you see something, ask a question.
Something.
That's
yep.
what you need to do.
So
that's what we need. We need a national approach. We need everybody to say that we are willing to help. And if that individual has information, just call us and we will make sure that we have a better handle of the whole situation.
Correct. That news tells us it's time for the latest. It's not time for that. It's time for the latest. It always reminds me. And when we come back, we're going to talk more on this, the Brass Tack Sunday special on the coronavirus, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
You don't have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christchurch 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to this Brass Tacks Sunday special. I'm your host, Corey Lane, the producer, Dennis Johnson. Our expert panel made up of Minister of Health, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostick, Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Kenneth George. We have PAHO representative, Dr. Jean-Marie. We have Yvonne Martindale in charge of infection control at the QEH. We had Ambassador Francois Jackman, our ambassador to China. And we're going to be joined shortly by the former director of civil aviation, Mr. Mitchison Beckles. And of course, we have you on the telephone lines, giving us a call at 434-1790 and also sending many WhatsApps at our WhatsApp 266-4862 and the Bajan line chat room, where we have Barbadians specifically in the diaspora, those living in New York, Canada. So their slogan is "Take off when the shoes at the door." Old Bajan thing, you know, take off the shoes. We're going to be hearing from them in just a moment, and we just want to remind you some of what we discussed on this program today. We looked at the level of training we have on the front line and across the board in Barbados. We have Miss Yvonne Watts here. She said this is her first infection. Yvonne Martindale. I keep saying that. Yeah. Good. Fourth infection of this type. So sit tight. We got this covered. We've looked at the structures in terms of the thermal tech, home monitoring, quarantine, isolation, ports. We got an update of our students in Wuhan and of course in China. Generally, and we looked at the whole idea of the shutting down and panicking versus looking at the science and the managing, the correct managing of this particular virus and others. One of the other things that struck me throughout the program is the number of mechanisms Barbados have in place for health that many Barbadians are not even aware of, including yours truly. So those are things that we have to keep in mind, that there are lots of things happening behind the scenes. So while we sleep, while we go about our business and shop and go to work, the authorities in Barbados, in many respects, are doing things at an international level. At this point in time, I think it is appropriate, as we talked about at the international level, to find out some of the things that we have in place at the airport and our ports. We have the Director of Aviation, the former Director of Aviation, Mr. Mitchison Beckles, on the line. We try to connect with him now. Good afternoon and welcome, sir. Good afternoon, sir. Mr. Beckles, are you there?
Your listeners.
Yes, please.
Okay, I think that we should start straight at the very beginning, and this is to allow people to know that we have systems in place whereby we are dealing with the World Health Organization. When we talk about the World Health Organization, we are talking about the United Nations. And when we talk about the International Civil Aviation Organization, we are talking about the United Nations. So if I say ICAO or WHO, I'm speaking about the United Nations. Now, the World Health Organization has in its International Health Regulations 2005 Annex 1, Section 6B, core capacity requirements for designated airports, ports, and ground crossing. Subsection 2D states that designated airports shall provide assessment and, if required, quarantine of suspected travelers, preferably in facilities away from the point of entry. So that is where we started. Now, the WHO is part of the United Nations, and ICAO is part of the United Nations. And ICAO has adopted this standard. And what they have done is ICAO noted member states have put out now their standard and recommended practice so that these things will go in place. So ICAO has adopted the World Health Standard, and in the ICAO Annex 9, Facilitation Standard 6.51, states that contracting states in cooperation with the airport authority shall ensure the maintenance of public health, including human, animal, and plant quarantine at international airports. So out of that now, in order for these standards to have teeth, they must now be incorporated into local law. So they go into your regulations. And this is where Barbados set out to ensure that we observe these standards that are set. In so doing, we, at the airport, I can speak specifically about the airport. I know that the seaport did likewise, especially during the time when we had the H1N1 around. We ensured that we met these standards. And there are guidelines that we will use in order to meet these standards. So what we did at the airport, and I go back to 2010, we implemented the quarantine center and a set of standard operating procedures. And all the persons on sundry were invited, and the chief medical officer, along with the Civil Aviation Department, GIA, Inc., the operator, there, the persons who would have worked on this. Now, GIA, Inc. is the operator of the airport. The Civil Aviation Department, as a government entity, they are the persons who would ensure or audit the airport to ensure that these things are in place. GIA, Inc., therefore, is to ensure that its tenants has all of these things in place, standards, training, and everything. And remember, training is not one-off. There must be refresher training or recurrent training in some cases. And for us in aviation, the Director of Civil Aviation will audit the airport. And one of the things in auditing the airport would be to audit the quarantine center and the prevention of spread of communicable diseases. Remember, this is not set up for SARS or chicken pox. This is for any communicable disease. So we don't have to wait till there's an epidemic then to spring into action. We should always be ready. So the airport has all of these facilities in place. Now, each entity has procedures for its workers, procedures that they must follow. Let's go back from the aircraft. The ICAO has set out the standards to be followed on board the aircraft when there are persons traveling with communicable diseases. So we don't have to, what we will do is ensure that that company has the systems in place. When that aircraft comes into our jurisdiction, then there are things that would happen. And the Port Health Authority, many people don't even realize that passengers cannot disembark an aircraft until it gets the clearance from the Port Health. Passengers can't leave Port Health. People have got to board the aircraft first to ensure that everything is all right before they can get off. And this is why sometimes at the airport, when there is a lot of activity and the Port Health people, down in numbers, cannot get on every aircraft to clear it, you may find yourself sitting in the aircraft waiting a while before you can disembark. These things happen. So the public in Barbados, they are not aware of these things. Now, there are many ways that you can get the information. The information can be given ahead, or the pilot on board could communicate this to the company, or he can communicate it to the necessary air traffic services. And they will spring into action, and each company knows what their responsibility is to that passenger, or their responsibilities are to the passengers who is exposed along with the index case. There are procedures that they will have to follow. Similarly, the people at the airport, they know what the procedures are that they will have to follow. And there's one here specific in the standard operating procedures, which I would point out, whereby people who have been affected by the virus are not to be processed with the normal rank and file passengers. These people must be processed at the quarantine center. And these are here in the procedures that we have set out at the airport. And all of the persons operating at the airport should have a copy of all these procedures, that they'll know what the other person is also doing and how what they are doing would impact what they have to do. And it's a complete system that we have. The chief medical officer, and I remember Dr. Manar Singh, those were the persons who were actively involved in the whole setup of this. And the air traffic services people, on getting this information and knowing that there's a case on board, will not put that aircraft with the other aircraft. This aircraft has to be isolated. And the procedures require that they will take that aircraft down to the western end between taxiway Bravo and taxiway Charlie, parked on taxiway Alpha. And the customs persons, they know what they have to do. They would all process those persons identified at the quarantine center, since they will not be processed at the normal terminal. There would be all outfitted with the necessary type of clothing, equipment, and so on. The quarantine center is there. Depending on numbers, the quarantine center can be expanded because we have tent facilities to allow for triage and all of that. So everyone is trained and know what they would have to do in these circumstances. So there is no need to panic. Now, in terms of auditing these entities, when we are auditing these entities, we ensure that the systems are in place. We ensure that their training their operations manuals are in place and are current, and that they contain the amendments sent out by the WHO or ICAO, as the case may be. Because they send amendments to all of these standards, the standards are reviewed every year and updated if necessary. And you must incorporate those changes in your regulations and so on. So you've got to be current. And if we carry out an audit, we want to see that it has been incorporated into your manual. We want to see that the persons are trained and don't tell us. We don't want to just hear from you verbally. But you have to show us the training document of the person, their records, that we can see and sign off, yes, the person was exposed to the training and so on. So persons at this juncture should not be scrambling like, no, not knowing what to do and so on. Not that it can happen, because if the appropriate entities are not keeping abreast with what their requirements and responsibilities are, then we will have these problems.
I want to tell you that your voice here has added to the calm that information, correct information, brings to a situation like this. I just want you to reiterate one point. And you spoke about training. And I would like for Barbadians to understand this is not just local training or regional training, but this is international training. The same training of the people in JFK and Heathrow and those places. I just want you to underscore that before we move on.
Right. The training program is made up from the standard and recommended practices of these United Nations entities. So when you bring your recurrent training or your refresher training in, these form part of your training program. So people are updated. So any part of the world you go, you are going to see the exact type of behavior, since it is the standard for the world. Because these persons, the standards and recommended practices sent out by the United Nations, is to regulate health around the world, aviation around the world, as the case may be. And persons are definitely expected to be exposed to this on a yearly basis. Refresher training, you may get away with, say, 2 years, but basically it should be yearly. But IQO, because of staffing and expense in training, may say 3 to 5 years, but people must go through refresher training. So there's no excuse to any entity that they don't know what to do and they are not exposing their staff, because you should not wait until you have a situation like this not to determine what you need to do. You should have known that a long time. How are you going to get the necessary clothing? I'm certain that when we were setting up this system at the airport, that the customs and immigration personnel, they were part of the system. And they knew the type of clothing. They were given the guidance by the health authorities as to the type of clothing and so on and how to access the clothing for their officers. So they know all of this. I could go a little step further to tell you back in 2011 that the Pan American Health Organization brought a contingent from South America and used Barbados as a model because they did not have these facilities in place as yet. And they came to Barbados and they used our facility as a model to see what it is like and what needs to be done.
There you go.
And I can go even a step further to say that we keep criticizing and criticizing. Barbados has some of the best facilities, medical facilities in the world. I'll give you one little experience. While I was director, I had an Avianca aircraft from Trinidad to Panama, and it experienced a passenger on board that took ill and had an attack. That aircraft, instead of diverting to or going back to Trinidad, they elected to come to Barbados to get medical assistance. Why? Because across the world, Barbados is known to be one of the places that you will find some of the best medical facilities. And that is what happened. Unfortunately, however, the passenger died, and then they proceeded to Panama. I thought I should mention something like that.
Well, very well said. That is the former director of Civil Aviation, Mr. Mitchison Beckles. I want to thank you and applaud you, sir, for that information. And just to put into context, H1N1 was discovered in 2009. It had just over 1.6 million cases with a 17% fatality rate. That meant just over 250,000 people died, and that would have touched 214 countries. No other major viruses have gotten past 30 countries based on the information in front of me here as a source from the World Health Organization. So that just puts in context that we have mechanisms for H1N1 and comparing it to what's happening now. So when you look at this, Minister, it seems as though we are managing, notwithstanding the few gaps, but we are managing this virus pretty good.
Yes, indeed we are. And in my opinion, how we manage is the key to keeping this country safe. And I'm saying to you that we have taken ownership of this particular situation. We are managing the situation. We even have gone to the extent of having an interministerial committee. We met yesterday, involving foreign affairs, tourism, education, health, of course, maritime affairs, information and public broadcast, home affairs, and that is really to coordinate the response that we are mounting at the moment. And my ministry will be setting up our medical emergency operations center from tomorrow, and that will, we will have the national emergency center also established, because as I indicated earlier, this goes way beyond health, and the only way that we can manage this at the national level is to have all of the major players and the entities sitting down and having discussions and being part of this process going forward. So yes, I'm satisfied with the management also within the Ministry of Health and Wellness in terms of all those persons at Port Health and our other facilities, Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And the key, leadership. And that leadership is being provided, first of all, by our Prime Minister, who've been in constant touch with me and also with that interministerial committee. And as Minister of Health and Wellness, I myself will be going around to visit all of these various entities. I intend to be at the airport when some of those larger flights are coming in, and when my staff are investigating persons, I will be there. I will be at the quarantine center if we have to take in people, because I want to give the assurance not only to Barbadians in general, but to the persons at the front line, that we are not going to put anybody at risk or ask people to do things which we ourselves are not prepared to do.
True army man. At the front line.
Always will be.
Yvonne Martindale wants to add in here.
Yes, please. But I want the public to understand that they also have a very important role to play. And that role is following the advice from the Ministry of Health and from persons like myself, and making sure that when you do read things online and social media, that you're reading it from a credible source. I cannot leave here without mentioning the importance of things that we call standard precautions, in particularly hand hygiene. Hand hygiene is very important. If you come in contact, because I keep saying this is season. Yes, we're talking about coronavirus, but there are other viruses out there around. So if you come in contact with, you know, surfaces, most surfaces are contaminated with lots of stuff. You need to make sure that you're washing your hands if you come in contact with any blood and body fluids. Beyond that, please use the hand sanitizers. Make sure that the hand sanitizer has at least 65% alcohol to be effective. Refrain from touching your face with your hands, especially your eyes, your mouths, and so on. And if you're coughing, you're coughing into tissue. Even if you don't have tissue, again, after you've cough, you need, or sneeze, you need to wash your hands or sanitize your hands if a sink is not available. And if you do feel that you have the symptoms of the flu, of this coronavirus, please seek medical attention.
You see, what if I'm interested in the fact sheet? It asks, how can I protect myself? It says the best way to prevent infection is to avoid being exposed to the virus, and this can be done. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. That's standard. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, mouth with unwashed hands. You mentioned that. Washing your hands as often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds or an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. This doesn't protect you from the coronavirus alone. This is basic hygiene that you are supposed to know. So I think these things just reiterate the need for good hygiene.
And just one other thing. The flu vaccine. It is there. It is available, especially to our frontline staff, and then to members of the public who have known chronic illnesses. We do know that if you do become sick, that those persons who do have chronic illnesses, which is not well controlled, are usually the ones who tend to have the complications and so on. So please get out there and get that flu vaccine. It will protect you. And even if you do get the flu, or even, God forbid, this coronavirus, more than likely that your symptoms will be milder.
One of the things I want to ask is, you spoke about getting the information from the correct place. So I want to ask y'all, what do you do with WhatsApps like these? It came in 4 minutes ago. Please pass it on. Good news. The Wuhan coronavirus can be cured with one bowl of freshly boiled garlic water. An old Chinese doctor has proven its efficiency. So you could call off the meeting. There's supposed to be a CARICOM meeting of ministers of health tomorrow. You could call it off because the cure is here. What do you do with messages like these?
Again, I reiterate, you need to, what's the source? Where is this information coming from? And
I'm a
scientific person. I need to see that information, and it must be repeated in regular studies, not a one-off study.
Correct.
Yes. So that's not advice that I would
see everybody going grabbing up the garlic tomorrow.
Not only that, but we have a responsibility to the country and to our people to ensure that any decision that we make, especially a serious decision, that it is evidence-based.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Correct.
And right. That is really the key for us.
And WhatsApp is not a source, people. I want to reiterate that. WhatsApp is not a source. We have a WhatsApp caller. We're going to try to push him up online and see if we can hear, I think, coming out of Canada. Good afternoon, sir. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I think we're doing. This is Toronto here in the cold. I'm still eating the snow. But anyway, I just want to say hello to your panel of guests. And stupidity and ignorance going around. Stuff like that. I like to say that the healthcare professionals have learned a lot after the experience with SARS. And if people are taking notice instead of running off with all of these crazy theories, they will realize that of the 300 people plus who died so far.
Hey, caller, you still there? All right, we'll try back on that. Before we finish, I want to just make sure that I don't forget this particular message. I want to say thanks to the entire team to say today's program has been very informative. So I actually want to extend that thanks, obviously, to the expert panel, those on the line, those in the studio, and, of course, the team effort of the team that put this together, including some of my moderator colleagues and the producer, of course. Caller, you still there?
Yeah, hi, I'm still here.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. We can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, you can hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yeah. Okay, so what I was saying is that 300 people have died plus in China, and only one has died outside. What that tells you is that the healthcare professionals have put in place, and this is pretty much all around the world, measures that are dealing with and identifying and treating this virus. Here in Canada, we've had at least one person who came down with the virus who has been charged. I think it was a husband and wife team here in Toronto, pair here in Toronto, and the husband, I think, has recovered. So the hysteria that is going around and the kind of silly things that people are talking about, what I'd like to say is that more people have died this flu season from the flu than have died from this virus so far. And I'd like to commend the program that you've put together and the health professionals that are there in the studio, because this is what is needed. Proper information to the public to quell and to discharge all of the silly things that are being said.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Corey, if I may just again exert some producer privilege and ask a question. I've heard the comments about alerting the public and passing information on. The school population, are we taking any additional steps to ensure that we educate the student population? Because sometimes the information spread on social media, parents, you know, perhaps just making their children a little too anxious about schoolmates who will be sneezing or just, you know, have a runny nose. So are we sensitizing our school population through a special program to keep them, you know, in the loop with what we're doing?
Thanks very much for that question. The answer is yes. Only yesterday at the interministerial meeting that we had, we decided then that it was absolutely necessary to do what you were asking us to do. And the ministry with responsibility for public information and broadcast and GIS, which is a pillar of that ministry, we are going to launch an attack, if you want to call it that, on the virus in terms of sensitizing our school children about what is happening.
All right, I just want to ask a follow-up to that. It says, Corey, it was stated that immigration customs red caps have been sensitized. What about the taxi drivers working at the airport and the taxi drivers and coach drivers in the port? Will the minister or the Ministry of Health implement an immediate program for those workers?
Dr. George, are you there? If he's not, I will answer and say, yes, I think that is a very important aspect of what we need to do, but we are doing it in terms of, in the order of priority, obviously those who are right at the front, on the front line. And we also believe that the screening process that we have introduced at the ports of entry will also mitigate against persons by the time numbers reach the taxis and coaches and so forth. They should, the risk level should be low, very low there. But I still think that it is a good idea to sensitize those persons. And I thank the person for the question.
One thing I want to quickly add in terms of the school children and parents is to remind parents that if their children do have signs of the flu, they should remain at home. My son was off for 2 days last week. He did not go to school, you know, so I follow the advice that I'm given. Yes. So if your children are actively coughing and having, you know, colds and so on and feverish, they really should stay at home because, of course, they're going to go to school and infect other persons.
Okay. Let's see if we get a couple more calls before we end. Brass Tack Sunday, good afternoon. You're on the air. Good afternoon and welcome, Brass Tack Sunday. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a quick question. I am part of a group that's going to be traveling to Singapore, Japan, Hong Kong, and so soon. And I'm very, very, apprehensive, of course, and part of the group in going to these locations and returning and having one to be quarantined or quarantined on the way back. Will we be affected as a group, one? And because we are now hearing that if we cancel, that no refunds are going to be provided to us. So I'm wondering, in terms of that, how, and it's non-essential travel, it's vacation, has been planned now for probably over a year. And I'm wondering now, how do we proceed? Or what advice can you give us as the group?
Well, the chief medical officer had indicated earlier, and the public service announcement was issued to this effect, indicating that we advise Barbadians on non-essential travels to Wuhan,
right,
which is ground zero. But outside of that, I don't think that you should have any undue worry, except obviously you take the necessary precautions. But the fact, the information available in terms of spread to those countries, I don't think that you have an issue there.
Okay, because I was just wondering, once we return, if we will be forced to be quarantined as a group.
No, you won't be forced to be quarantined.
Ma'am, what I would advise you as a group to do as well, just like supporting what the minister said, make sure that you practice standard basic hygiene practices, yes? Make sure that you keep yourself well hydrated. I always advise persons as well, boost up on your vitamin C. It cannot hurt. And any chronic illnesses that persons have, try to make sure that they take their medication with them and take them as they're being prescribed. And have a good time.
Okay, well, we'll try. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right, good. This one says, good afternoon, sir. Greetings to your panel. After listening to the speakers, I am assured that we are prepared. The authority with which they spoke gave us the assurance that our ports are ready. Brastas, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon to the ladies and the gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to ask you a question. And something that Mr. Dennis Johnson gets with about the school change, but I would like to raise also about the disabled. I know it might sound silly that I keep speaking about the disabled, because when it is anything to do with disasters or these things, we is always the last left behind. And I hear you talk about the food bubbles. I hear you talk about some person might not be able to take it. So, and I hear like also that we will move away from that we keep looking at. We keep looking at the disabled as people that born with disability. People today is very full, people that born with disability. So we have to look at disability in a whole new way. So I just want to sense the same thing that Dennis Johnson said, the school chamber will go to the same thing.
For the disabled.
The disabled and the senior citizens.
seniors. All right, we're coming to the end, so I'm going to allow the minister to answer that quickly. So thanks for the question.
Yeah, thanks for the question, ma'am. I give you the assurance that you, the persons with disabilities, are very valued and loved members of this society. But you've raised an interesting point, and I will take this back to the office, to the technical people, and we will address this issue to your satisfaction, ma'am.
And that is one of the things I was talking about, allowing the public to come in to make sure that we have all our corners covered, so that at the end of the day that we will be a safer, healthier, and hence wealthier society. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Colonel Boyce Bostick, for being here, Minister of Health. Yvonne Martindale from the Infection Control.
I didn't want to leave this program, in all honesty, without, on behalf of the government of Barbados, extending our sincerest condolences to the government and people of China for the loss of life as a result of this virus, and recently, obviously, to the government of the Philippines, and to say that we are really appreciative of the efforts by the government of China to try to contain the virus.
Thank you very much for that. Also, thanks to Ambassador Francois Jackman, Ambassador to China, our PAHO representative here in relation to disease control, Dr. Jean-Marie Urangbumba. We had also Mitchison Beckles, and of course, producer Dennis Johnson. I've been your host, Corey Lane. I've got to thank, lastly, those who we did it in association with, Williams Industries Incorporated.